I've never met, so I worked to a certain extent with teenagers and middle school kids. Ever met a teenager or middle schooler who is aware of and understanding of their own timelineness? I mean, it's just like they have no idea. They got no idea. None, you know.
Well, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. You don't know what you don't know. That's so important.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Jenny Friedman. I'm an ADHD coach and the host of the show. Yeah, we need a lot more people talking about ADHD because it's invisible. If you had a pair of glasses that can make you see the invisible, what would ADHD look like? If you're wondering right now where your glasses are, you're probably in the right place. This show has a mission. Demystify and destigmatize ADHD once and for all. Stuff isn't rocket science, people. Join me in welcoming today ADHD coach Andrew Acre. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we met at CHAD, the conference in New Orleans, which was a lot of fun. We briefly spoke, and I think you were hanging out a little bit longer with my friend Agnes, who's been on the show before.
Yeah.
Awesome. But I run up to the room for something. When I came back, there you were. And we spoke a little bit about, I asked you if you want to do the show, because I do remember saying, oh, we were talking about time blindness or something about time.
Okay.
So, you know, we can talk about that. We can also talk about anything you want to talk about. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Because I just know you as an ADHD coach, but what that means for you, I don't know.
Okay, so I have a nice little segue here. I remember listening to, I can't remember whether it was on your show or when Eric Tivers interviewed you for his show or what, but you came from a retail background before this, right? So I did too, to a certain extent. That's part of my journey. So I thought that was really interesting.
I'm sorry.
That's hilarious. But one of the things that I liked in listening to you talk about that was shopping therapy or something like that. You know, you love talking with people. And for me, so the job that I had directly before getting into studying coaching was I ran a wine store, and at the time I knew that I was going to be transitioning into something in kind of the, you know, psychological field. You know, for me, that whole process was just this big lab for like observing people's behaviors. And like my favorite thing about that job was, you know, having people come in that maybe had buying wine is like an intimidating experience for a lot of people, or it's like just an unappealing experience for a lot of people, or they just don't care. And so it was really fun for me to take, like, so say, a woman in her late 20s comes in with her like boyfriend, and the woman's at the counter like buying cheese, and she's all into that. And like, you know, the boyfriend's just kind of hang back and is like, I don't drink wine, I drink beer. And then like have them like taste something, and in that, you know, 5-minute experience sort of change somebody's mind about something and have them walk away with like, oh, I like something new and I learned something, and, you know, just have a new perspective on something in life. And that was my favorite thing about that whole experience, was that I got to do that every day. And I think also one of the ways in which working retail or waiting tables or, you know, sales jobs like that, one of the best things that it does for people that become coaches is that, you know, you get such instant feedback, you know, and you have lots of opportunities to sort of do over and over and over again. So one of the best things about that is, you know, is the repetition of it and the instant feedback. You know, in a retail job or a sales job or waiting tables, you know, you get instant feedback and you get to do it again and again and again and again. You know,
and get better.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's one of the things that really helped me prepare for being a coach, was just getting to see how, you know, people react to stuff on a daily basis, and just sort of being a student of that for, you know, a number of years in my life.
I totally get that. Yeah, that's cool. It's something that I said, I'm sorry, because retail's rough, you know. And one of the things that I love about coaching is that it's not dealing with the general public. And that's the thing that I didn't like about retail, because you couldn't control at all who was you were going to interface with.
Yeah.
And as a coach, I find that there has to be some sort of resonance between you and the client on their end and on your end, or it's not going to work. I think that the general public aspect was the thing I liked the least, but it was cool to meet new people. I do enjoy meeting new people.
I agree. And I think that I will put a little star on what you just said, that I think that the general public aspect of it, though, is one of the things that makes us better coaches. You know, like if you can deal with anyone, you know, walking through your door, that makes you better at dealing with the thorny things in, you know, conversations with, you know, the clients who you love. It makes you more adaptive and adaptable. So.
That's true. Ooh, that's good insight.
I think that's a huge part of it.
Okay. So you were in retail, and how'd you discover coaching? How'd you discover about ADHD coaching? Because that's very specific.
Right. So I got diagnosed with ADHD when I was in fifth grade. And so, and that was kind of at the beginning of the ADD boom, I would say. I mean, I'm 34. At the time that I was diagnosed, I was the only kid that went to the school nurse's office at lunch to get ADD meds. And then, like, you know, within a year, that wasn't the case anymore. And so I've known about ADD, you know, my ADD has been a big part of my life for, you know, as long as I can remember, you know, and it certainly colors, you know, the experiences, you know, well before my diagnosis. You know, it's always been something that I've been interested in. And so I got a bunch of help in school for ADD, and I went to a boarding school that like had, you know, a special learning skills program and stuff like that. And then I got to college and I went to a great college that I loved. And, you know, about halfway through college, I was going in a creative direction anyway. So I sort of went off my ADD medication. And then I kind of didn't think about ADD for about 10 years, from like 20 to around like 29 or 30. And at that point, I'd been like waiting tables and bartending. And that was a fun thing that taught me a lot. And taught me a lot about social skills and stuff like that, which is a big thing for a lot of people with ADD. And it was fun and it was on my feet and it was compelling, but I wanted to do something, you know, much deeper with my life. And I was seeing a therapist at the time who had something of a specialty in ADHD. And I was talking to her about my interest in, you know, behavior and the behavioral sciences and stuff like that. She was like, well, have you considered being an ADHD coach or looking into that? And I hadn't up to that point. But she sort of made that connection to me. And then she, you know, connected me with like one or two coaches that I could talk to. And at the same time, I went through a process with the career counselor, career coach, that was incredible. Like life-changing, incredible process. And that really solidified the ADHD coach thing, because it was like we went through this 8-session process, sort of, you know, determining interests and aptitudes and abilities and narrowing everything down. And it was by the end of that 8 weeks, I felt so fully convinced that this was the right career path for me. So sort of been on that journey since then.
Oh, wow. So when you were doing the, before you got to there, like when you stopped taking the medication and you really didn't think about ADHD and you were doing like young adult stuff, bartending and waiting, were you living near home or were you really on your own out?
I was living on my own. I mean, I lived in DC and my parents lived, you know, about an hour away in Virginia. But I was living on my own.
So your life really could have gone a whole different way.
In what sense? What do you mean?
Well, if he hadn't hooked up with the psychiatrist, like the therapist, if he hadn't hooked up with the school counselor.
Yeah. You mean like earlier in my life, or do you mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely think that's true.
I did the same thing. That's why I guess where I'm also making that connection.
Because
I remember being 20 waitress, like cocktail waitressing, making so much money.
Mm-hmm.
It was sick. Mm-hmm. And then I want to be a bartender when I turn 21. And in North Carolina, you have to wait till you're 21. I did then. And so I'm 21. I start bartending and I was making so much money. And I drove a little red Fiat. Mm-hmm. And I had cash and not care in the world. And I just kept thinking to myself, I have to do something with my life. This is horrible.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like when you said, you know, you could have gone a really different path. I think it was inevitable that I needed so badly to do something really meaningful with my life. And like, you know, what I was describing with the wine shop, that was sort of a thing that really let me know, what I'm really interested in is why people do what they do and how do we get them to change their perspective on things. I mean, that was what I did for 2 years running a wine store. You know, that was definitely the most interesting thing to me about it. So that was kind of the mental transition into coaching and the thing that gave me the confidence to kind of, you know, start looking at that.
Well, very cool. Cause I love to meet fellow coaches. You can have a lot in common, but you don't have the background. It sounds like we have a lot in common, including the background. Mm-hmm. Neat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And I would say there's sort of one other point into why I got into coaching. And it was because going back to, you know, getting diagnosed at a young age, I think this isn't something that I hear talked about a lot. But so it's like, you know, we listen to people that got late diagnoses and stuff like that. And there's a lot of recognition in that community about, you know, not about the sort of the trauma or the shame or the stigma, you know, that can come with sort of not, you know, having ways to deal with your ADD and not knowing about it. And I think that's really true. And I don't want to take anything away from that statement whatsoever. So that's not my point at all. But I think it's also true that, you know, people, you know, that do get a diagnosis young can still not get the help that they need, or they can get a lot of help that doesn't help. And that was definitely the case with me. You know, I think we're light years ahead of where we were in terms of how kids, you know, the kinds of help that kids get provided by their school or whatever, but there's still so much more to be done. And for me, my MO, like my whole motivation to getting into this business was like, I know what didn't work for me. And I got a lot of exposure to it, you know, like from fifth grade through high school, I had academic support for learning skills every year. And so much of it, and this isn't a knock to anybody that helped me, but so much of it wasn't really useful. And
I believe you. I do.
Right. And so much of that reinforced, you know, kind of feelings of inability. You know, if you're getting help that doesn't help.
I know. I'll share this story that is horrible that I had this experience, but you know, it's all learning.
Yeah.
And, down the street from me, the school system I'm in, a very small town. So there's five schools in the school system. Yeah. And there's, two that are the little, primary schools. And I was doing substitute work there and was told to go help this child because he needed to be in a distraction-free room and to do his, I was supposed to just redirect. Zero training on how to redirect. And even though I have a family full of ADHD, no training on how to be sensitive to what is really going on. This is before I did any training or anything with ADHD.
Yep.
So there I am with this little boy and he's trying to read a sentence and I keep tapping on the table here. He's looking around over here, tapping. He finally, I mean, this was like went on for probably 5 or 6 minutes and he finally sort of lost it with me. Like, bam, he goes, "That's not helping." And I was like, because you have problems, like in my mind, because you just aren't paying attention. Like, you know, so judgmental, so not helpful. That was me, which is why I felt so propelled when I have learned about all of this
like help adults realize what's not helpful and why, because they don't know. They do not know. And it's a shame.
Yeah.
I want to say it's a sin, but they are not doing it in purpose. It's a shame. Because I know that's still going on in the school. Yeah. It's not me doing it anymore, but someone's doing that.
What you said made me think of a couple different things. Your story, because I think that like your description of like, you know, you being the one who sort of gave unhelpful help is really important. And I think it's really important to for all of us to hear that, because that's inevitable. You know, that's inevitable in life. You know, we're all going to do that. We're all going to not know what to do at times, you know, and I just think that that's so important. And it has a parallel in terms of maybe the ADD kid as well, because, you know, there's an ability gap on both sides. There's an ability gap on the kid who doesn't know, you know, how to help himself. And there's an ability gap on the people who are there to help him, you know, theoretically.
Right. I mean, to go talk to schools would be an amazing thing, because, and I know some coaches do that and because there's the privacy law. So they can't tell you what, they can't say, oh, this kid has ADHD.
Right.
So they don't tell you what's going on. And even if they did, most people wouldn't know what to do anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a perfect way of putting it. The ability gap. What do you think? What's the solution?
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, this is something of like a favorite topic or idea of mine, because I think that, I mean, we can tie a couple different ideas in there with it. First off is, you know, sort of the invisibility of ADHD. There not being that recognition that there is a difference in ability. Right. And that it being attributed to like motivation instead, or like a moral failing, or
some character flaw.
Yeah, exactly. Or a complete, you know, gross underestimation of like the ability gap, you know, so it's like, oh, you just need to try harder. You'll get it, you know, without being honest or accurate. Actually, there's a really big gap in between where this kid is right now and what you're asking of him. And the most helpful thing that we can do is to bridge that gap by putting, you know, steps in place, by putting something that's within that child's reach first, you know, and doing that step by step. And, you know, not just this total underestimation of like what's actually required or what's actually going on.
Oh yeah. It broke my heart too with some of the other kids. There's this other kid. He was just the cutest thing in the world. And he just pushes and pushes and pushes and doesn't listen, doesn't pay attention, but he's very polite. He was over from some other country with the politeness was extremely atypical for a second grader. Uh-huh. And at one point I said to him, you know, we're walking down the hall, because he acts like he wants to do everything, but then he doesn't want to do anything.
Yeah.
And I said, have you ever heard the word exasperated? And he goes, oh yes, my mom says that a lot. And I thought, the shame though, that goes with that, you see, I mean, that's the story. Yes, I've heard that a lot.
And this was a kid. How old was he?
7.
Okay. Yeah.
And he's internalizing it. You know, he is.
Absolutely. I think that's so true. I think that's so important. I've worked with a couple younger kids, and my engagement like with those kids hasn't been so extensive, because like, you know, I think I'm good to do a little bit of coaching with the kid. But like really, you know, working with the parents for me is more helpful in that situation in terms of my skill set. But I think it's, man, the shame piece, it's like, whew, that starts early. That's, you know, like some of my earliest memories are, you know, situations of, you know, where I, you know, wasn't doing the right thing. And I didn't realize it until like I was, you know, being sort of name called by my peers or asked, why are you doing that? Or something like that. You know, those are many of my earliest memories.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's such a huge piece. And I'm really glad that there's more discussion about that in the ADHD community.
Oh yeah. Well, and to your point though, so by creating these little steps,
yeah,
we can start to fix that or eliminate so much shame, because now you're giving the ability to have confidence grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that, you know, and that's, I think, would be the fix. I mean,
yeah.
Or at least if you have two stories going on in your head, okay, I'm not doing this right, but wow, I do this right, you know,
yeah.
That you can, as you get older, start to choose, all right, which one are you going to focus on, and not do it all when you're, you know, 40 and 50. By the time I have people come to me, and there's a lifetime of this, you know, negative self-talk and shaming, you know, memories. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think that reminds me of, you're familiar with growth mindset versus fixed mindset,
mm-hmm.
whole idea. Yeah. I think that's so important, you know, to try and convey and to kids and to families to sort of communicate along those terms. Because a lot of kids, you know, say you have a bright kid with ADHD, you know, if they are bright and they can't do something, you know, that makes them, you know, it's like, well, you tell me I'm smart and I still can't do this. I must be really broken.
Oh, yeah.
So shifting our like language towards emphasizing effort and emphasizing growth rather than, you know, saying to a kid, well, you're so smart, you should just be able to do this, you know, or whatever.
Isn't that horrible? It's just the worst thing. And I can't say it never comes out of my mouth either with my son.
Yeah.
Poor thing, he's 9.
Uh-huh.
And I try as much as I know I try, but there's times I'm on automatic pilot.
Oh yeah.
And I say, it comes out and I'm like, oh, I can't take that back.
Uh-huh.
And then I try to run around. Well, what I mean is,
yeah,
you know, which it's not perfect, but parenting is not, you know, there's no perfect way to do it, but to always just try.
Yes.
Your best, I guess.
Absolutely. And, you know, and have those things that like, you know, use good sources, you know, like I think growth mindset is a really important, legitimate way of thinking about things. You know, always try and, you know, use the best stuff that you can to inform how you do what you do.
Right. Well, I'm going to switch this over a little bit. I don't love to direct.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
But I did want us to talk a little bit because you mentioned about the time blindness and I don't hear it talked about enough. I don't believe I've done a podcast on it.
Okay.
I write about it a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't talk about it. So I thought when you said that, I thought that's so interesting. Yeah. Let's have a conversation about that. If you don't mind.
No, absolutely.
People don't know what it is even. A lot of people, even with ADHD, don't realize what it is till you draw it out for them or explain it. And then they go, oh yeah, I guess I do that.
Okay. So I, you know, absolutely. I totally agree. It's something doesn't get something there's not enough understanding of, particularly, I mean, to your point, I've never met. So I worked to a certain extent with, teenagers, and middle school kids. Ever met a teenager or middle schooler who is aware of and understanding of their own time blindness? I mean, it's just like, they have no idea. They got no idea. None, you know?
Well, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. You don't know what you don't know. That's so important. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Okay. So yeah, absolutely. I'd love to talk about that.
Well, tell me how it affects you. Tell me what you experience. Are you someone who's late or early or on your own clock?
Yes and no. I'm late with deadlines and doing tasks. I'm not late to things though.
Mm.
So I've always been consistently late about like, you know, turning things in, and have always relied on, you know, waiting to the last minute to do things, to get that, you know, burst of energy that I need and that focus.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, one of the terms I use in addition to time blindness is like, I don't think I'm just time blind as in I don't think I just have a hard time seeing the future or seeing where I am in time. I think there's also like a time illiteracy component too, because it's like, in addition to like not being able to see time or see the future or see where I am in time, like I had there was a really big gap in like, I didn't speak the language of time. Like, again, I didn't know what I didn't know. Like, you know, if I look at a calendar, you know, for so much of my life, if I looked at a calendar, it didn't register as anything to me. It just looked like a blank page with numbers on it. You know, like I didn't, you know, if I look at, you know, a planner, I don't see like myself walking myself to soccer practice next Tuesday that I have to do. I just saw like a blank page, you know?
So really literal.
Yeah.
And,
absolutely.
And not the abstract.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Does that make sense to you?
It totally makes sense. And I think probably explains why a lot of my clients have an aversion to calendars, unless they're fun, color-coded to the nth, I mean, beyond, using several that will link up with each other.
Yeah.
And so they're not seeing time as a one continuum where you are in time and space in the world. And, you know, they're seeing it as a, I get it now, like, the way you're describing, that must be, they're looking at like, well, it doesn't look pretty, so let's at least color code what mm-hmm. I have to do. Mm-hmm. And, ooh, I just took all my action steps, and now I'm going to link them up with a calendar that's just for household chores.
Mm.
And then they have a calendar for work. And then they have a calendar for, and I'm like, okay, well, what happens if you use one calendar? And it's this like, huh? Why would I use, what?
Uh-huh. Interesting. Interesting.
You know, and then as we start to explore, well, if you looked at a calendar, I've even said, I'm like, if you look at a calendar as the beginning of the day, and now it's lunchtime, and now it's dinner, and now it's the next day, I have had people say to me, huh, I never looked at it like that before, which I never got how you couldn't. I'm seeing now with what you're saying. Thank you for that. Because you know what people don't realize?
Yeah.
You don't know what you don't know. I didn't realize that the concept was so, you know, it's not innate. So it's right. A little like, this is a piece of paper with me being somewhere on Tuesday. Okay.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's like reading a sentence in a foreign language, you know, in a way. You know,
there's no connection to it. Got
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like what we want to happen when we look at a planner, you know, or a calendar is for us to be able to see like in our minds, those things, right? Like we want to see ourselves, you know, doing those errands or doing like actually getting out the vacuum to do the vacuuming on Saturday morning. That's the ability that we're going for, you know, but for so much of my life, when I saw, instead of seeing that, when I was trying to use a calendar, what I would see is in my mind is I would see the picture of the calendar. That's all I would see. You know, I would see like the picture of the calendar and the fact that I just wrote something on it. That's it. You know,
right. There
would be nothing behind that. And
no meaning.
No meaning.
Yeah. If you don't have meaning, it doesn't mean anything.
Yes.
I mean, I often am Captain Obvious, but like, but that's sort of blowing my mind though, this is so awesome because people hearing this for whether you have ADHD or not to understand that that's what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
So now let's go back to the shame thing we were talking before. So now if you're not prepared to go vacuum in the, let's say that you know, you're not prepared to, maybe you didn't fix the vacuum last time something happened to it and you just shoved it in the closet,
mm-hmm.
forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time to vacuum again. And mm-hmm. now your spouse or someone's looking at you like, I thought you were going to fix that. You knew we had to do this before the company came and now we can't do it. And you're like, yeah, none of that was a thought in my head. That was not the connections I was making.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what were the thoughts in your head instead of that? So the thoughts in your head instead of that were like, oh, I got to remember that. oh, I'm going to get in trouble if I don't do that. That's so important. I have to do that. Like, you know, it's in a way, it's like the only thing that's in my head is like sort of the negative thoughts and feelings around that. And, you know, just like the sentence, like, do this, you know, but there's
And the fear, if I forget,
exactly,
now it's going to happen. It's a drag.
Yeah. So I'll throw another sort of twist into this conversation, because this has kind of been the epiphany for me around this, and the thing that really opened up being able to be, you know, someone who sees time better. And that is that for me, the biggest difference in being able to, you know, manage my time and tasks has been really working on visualizing my, you know, the tasks in my mind, and like trying to build, you know, trying to make a habit out of visualizing when I think about tasks and build up those muscles in my brain.
Right. Like a more robust way of looking at an activity. It isn't just the label of the activity.
Yes.
It's the ramping up and the preparation and the time it takes to get from either one room to another, or what has to, I have to go by this to be able to do this, which means, you know, if I'm going to get someone off the bus at 3, I better go to the store now because I won't be back in time.
Right. And making it, you know, making it very visceral. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. That's totally what I was thinking. I think one of the things for me was, and I really didn't understand the importance of doing exactly what you just described in terms of, seeing time. I didn't understand. I mean, literally, like what I'm saying here is that one, like, activity of visualizing my tasks has made more of a difference in seeing time than anything else in my life. And I didn't understand that before I started doing it. I knew that it was sort of the right direction to go into, because I tried a bunch of other things.
Right.
But it has made a bigger difference in my life in terms of getting tasks done and being on a timeline than anything else. And I think that there are a couple things going on in there for me. One of the things is, like, I avoided visualization, you know, for so much of my life, because one, you know, when people described like visualizing, or other coaches described visualizing, it was always kind of in a touchy feely way. Right. You know, it's an empowering exercise, you know, it's about your dreams, right? Blah, 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 blah. Fucking stab me in the head.
No, I know. I'm laughing because my husband, I told him, oh, you got to watch The Secret. Mm-hmm. So he's like, all right, just humoring me, watching The Secret. And he had this guy gets on there and says, you know, we don't know where, no one knows where electricity comes from. My husband takes the remote.
Yes.
Click. He's like, actually, we do. And the fact that you don't makes me know I don't want to watch you.
Exactly. Exactly. So I can't stand that stuff. I mean, like, I take it with a grain of salt, and I am not a macho dude. And like, I can be woo woo at times myself, but like, for me, people talking about visualization just was like, okay, turn off my brain. Not going to listen anymore. Right. I'm going to take this opportunity now to go off and, like, you know, do my own thinking or whatever. But, like, you know, I'm not really concerned with your visualization.
I am not making a vision board. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. But so there was
somehow they convinced you to try it.
Well, yeah. So there was sort of that impression of visualization. God, I lost my train of thought here.
I went off on a tangent. Sorry.
The other thing was that, like, you know, there's so much emphasis on vision being connected to dreams, right? And dreaming was never my problem as an ADDer ever in my life. You know what I mean? Like, I was always a dreamer. Like, I don't need help with dreaming. Trust me. Okay. Like, you don't need to help me with that. Right.
Right.
You, like, if you don't understand that by now, then you're not the coach for me. Right.
Right.
So dreaming was never the issue for me. What was the issue was connecting the dreaming part of my brain with the planning part of my brain. Those two sides never talked. I mean, the planning of my brain, you know, fundamentally underdeveloped. And the dreaming part of my brain had started to die, you know, basically because I never realized my dreams. Earlier this year, called Rethinking Positive Thinking. And one of the big, you know, like, the biggest takeaway for me from that book was like, it's written by a researcher who studies dreaming and planning and stuff like that. And she was like, in her studies, she's found that the more somebody dreams about something without planning, the less likely they are to do that thing or get that thing or achieve that thing. Right.
Which makes sense.
And so reading that, I was like, okay, light bulb, obviously, like I need to like connect these two parts of my brain. And she has an exercise called WHOOP, which is, you know, sort of a visualization exercise. And WHOOP stands for wish, outcome, obstacle, plan. And so the simple formula is you think of, you know, something that you'd really like, you know, you'd really like, or you'd really like to do, or you'd really like to happen. That's the wish part. And then you think about what that would give you, what that would mean to you, or how that would change your life, right? And then the obstacle part, you think of what inside of you is in the way. So not, you know, shifting it towards external circumstances, but, or even if it is external circumstances, you know, think about your reaction to those external circumstances or what you, you know, will do about those things. So making it, thinking of the internal obstacle. And then you make a plan, you know, that's an if-then statement. That's like, you know, I'd like this. And if this obstacle comes up, then I will do this. Right?
Brilliant.
And for me, I'm a total research geek. Like, I want to hear it from the primary source. You know, the fact that she had like decades of research into this subject, I was like, okay, I'm convinced. I'm going to do this. So I made a commitment to do that. And I did it 60 days in a row. And it changed, and it totally changed my life.
Wow.
It basically built in, you know, I was getting the reps in. It was like I was doing, you know, training for that part of my brain. And the dreaming and the planning parts of my brain started to talk to each other for the first time. And I really learned so much about myself and gained a lot of ability in doing that.
Wow, that is so cool. So wait a minute. So I wrote it down because this is huge.
Yeah.
So wish, think of the outcome.
Yeah.
Think of the obstacle, the internal obstacle that you're dealing with, mm-hmm. and make a plan with an if-then statement.
Yeah. Exactly.
To manage it. So, and then you said that you did this for 60 days. Mm-hmm. Now, how can you walk me through that? Like, was it when you first woke up in the morning? How'd you do it every day for 60 days? Because that's a problem I find with my clients have a lot of problems of being consistent with their best intentions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this came at a, you know, I haven't asked, I would never ask a client to like, you know, do this for 60 days. Right.
Oh no. And I wouldn't either. I'm absolutely. Just saying anybody listening to this, I don't want them to say, wow, that sounds really great, but I know me and I can't do anything longer than a week. And then they blow it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I'm asking you to talk us through a little bit about maybe what helped you, how you looked at it. So that it was something you wanted to do.
Right. Okay. So a couple of things. So going back to Carol Dweck and Growth Mindset, again, a research geek, like I read that book and I was like, okay, here's decades of research, which proves that if you believe you can change, you can change. And that is the single most important factor in your ability to change is your belief that you can change, period. That's it. There, like the sentence doesn't go longer than that, right? Like if there's anything that like has changed, you know, that's just the most powerful sentence in my life is that like, if you believe you can change, you can change. That's the only thing that matters, right? And if you don't believe you can change, you won't.
Like, oh yeah, no, I'm right there with you right now.
Right. So sort of like, so, you know, reading that book, The Mindset, and like, and just really, really taking that message in, you know, and then reading this book about connecting the dreaming and planning parts of my brain and having this epiphany about like, I've been a dreamer and, you know, I've never known how to plan. And that's why so many of the things in my life that I've wanted to come true haven't come true. And that this is a legitimate path. You know, she'd done studies with ADHD students, you know, to see how this affected their life. And I was like, you know, this sounds like an amazing tool. And, you know, like, I know that if I put the reps in on this, this is going to change my life, you know, right. And I don't know how it's going to change my life. I don't know how much of a return I'm going to get into it. I had a suspicion that like the return would be equivalent to, you know, my effort, you know, that like, that if I did it, like I was going to get something out of it. Even if the exercise turned out to not be that great or not that magical, like the fact that I was doing it as an exercise every day, then I was really trying to connect the dreaming, like the wish with the planning, mm-hmm. you know, every day that I was right. forcing a conversation between those two things.
I like looking at it that way too.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
You know, that if I connected those two parts of my brain on a daily basis, that was going to make a big difference in my life. I knew it, you know, I was totally convinced. And I also knew that like, that if I committed to doing this every day, that would mean a ton to me. It would mean a ton. And the thing is that like, so I did this for 60 days. I can't tell you how many, like at least 10% of the days, my whoops were about whooping. Were like, you know, it was like, I want to make sure that I do this over the weekend when we're traveling. Right. Because it's going to be, you know, that's going to be unfamiliar circumstances. And these are the things that could get in the way and blah, 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 blah. You know, and that didn't feel at all like a cheat to me. That felt like me making.
No. Yeah. I agree. That's the whoops were about whooping.
Yeah. So
what was the name of that book again?
It's called Rethinking Positive Thinking.
I just want to put it in the show notes.
And can I mention another podcast?
Yeah.
Okay. I first heard about it on the, The One You Feed podcast. The podcast is called The One You Feed. And okay. It was an interview with her, and her name is Gabrielle Uttingen. And I can spell that for you. I can like send you a little note with that, how to spell her name. But I first heard about her in that book through that podcast. Mm. And I think that even more than reading that book, just go listen to that interview with her because it gives you a sort of what you need to know.
Right. Which is great because you know what? A lot of people
aren't going to, yeah.
They're not going to read. But exactly. I'd like to put in the show notes so that they can if they want. Yeah. I'll put both.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So yeah, so that totally changed everything for me. And then I'll throw in one other thing about visualizing because... this is some stuff that I learned at the Chad conference that you didn't get to see, right? Because you were gone on Saturday morning.
That's right.
But I wanted to share because that has fleshed out the rest of the picture as well. Saturday morning plenary at the Chad conference, these two women named Sarah Ward and Kristen Jacobson, who are speech language pathologists, but who specialize in helping students with executive function skills, gave the plenary. And it was like, it was so next level. It blew my mind. My mind exploded out of my head. I'll give you a little bit of the gist of some of the things that they talk about there, because it's stuff that I've been using in my practice already. And I've seen the difference that it makes in, you know, dealing with my my kid clients and their parents. So I'll start with this analogy or this description. So they talk about getting a 9-year-old girl ready for school in the morning, right? And they, you know, who's a 9-year-old girl who has, you know, notorious difficulties getting her stuff ready for school, you know, getting dressed, getting her stuff in her backpack, brushing her teeth, you know, et cetera, making sure she eats breakfast, all that stuff. So they talked about like the different ways that we as coaches or whoever might work with that. And they're like, okay, so we can make a list, a written list for the kid to work with, right? Or we could make a list that has clip art on it, right? Of the items, you know, here's your jacket, blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, we can, you know, take a picture of her on a day when she's ready to go. And then we can, you know, provide that picture for her. And which do you think is going to help the most? So I was like, oh yeah. Okay. So, you know, I'd heard that before, but then they kind of gave a little bit of the cognitive science behind it. And again, you know, that was the thing that really convinced me. And it was that one of the things that they said was that like, you know, our brains need to see the whole picture first, before we understand the details. It's just fundamental to our brain that we see things like in gestalt first. And that's the fancy word for seeing, you know, the whole picture.
Right.
When you show a picture, you know, when you give a kid clip art, you're not giving them the mental image of them dressed. It's equivalent to the planner, the words on a planner for me. It's like if I were to look at clip art, it wouldn't really do much more for me than looking at a planner. It might do a little bit more, but clip art is, you know, is still kind of just, it's words, it's pictures as word. It's not really a whole picture that makes you really conjure the image in my mind of this is
or
what
connect to you, right?
Exactly. This is what done looks like. And, you know, the other thing that they emphasized was start with the end in mind. And they sort of had a really great formula for that. And their website, I think, is efconnect.com. And so you could find more about them there. But, you know, just that piece about, you know, a list for a kid with ADD or a list with clip art for a kid with ADD, it doesn't conjure that image in their mind. What we need for them to do is to be able to really create the picture in their mind is, what do I actually need to look like to be ready?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the question we need them to answer.
It's great. I have actually used this with my clients because it's not just kids.
Yeah.
It's adults too.
Absolutely.
And you can take a picture and put the picture up like what you want to look like. Especially I have a lot of adults who we work with hygiene and, you know, for them to see a picture of themselves when they have their hair done, they've been showered, they have their teeth brushed, that's helpful. And I've even had people put it on their iPhones, like as a screensaver, a good picture of themselves that they can refer to without having to look, where's the picture, or remember to look for the picture, or deal with the picture. And I've explained it. I don't know what I read, but this is cool because this is, I read it too. Your brain makes these connections like building backwards.
Yeah.
So to see the outcome, which is why the visualizing is so, it's like seeing an outcome. Your brain will come up with a way to make it happen if it sees what needs to happen.
Yes.
I actually, not to take any power away from the plenary, because I actually do know that, like, and have seen it in action. And I can tell you it is uber powerful.
Yeah. I think that the big thing for me was like this distinction between the power, you know, the distinction between a list or a list that with like clip art and like that whole picture. That was really the big distinction for me, was like, this is a difference between one and zero, you know, in terms of power for people.
Yes.
And that may be a personal thing for me since, you know, again, my story is the ADD kid that got a lot of help that wasn't quite the right fit, you know, for our ADD clients, is we got to get the stuff that works right for them and not the stuff that's like, you know, part of the way there. And so just that, just
the
that,
non-help.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. And a lot of what they're being told in schools, and I'm taking this to companies too, speaking to them, is this one size fits all attitude that, you know, is so predominant here. I mean, in America anyway, we just really figure you got your desk, you got your computer, you know, go for it. And taking out the individual out of the whole equation.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you've tapped into Andrew in a way that's making you just really, it's all clicking, connecting. It's very inspiring for people, including me, because, you know, you go on automatic pilot.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really take, like my sister says this, she sent me this song. She has ADHD and I don't.
Yeah.
Sends me this song about something about the grass is greener. It's an 80s song that we loved when we were kids. But I was like, oh my God. It made me think though, when you're on automatic pilot, I mean, yeah, there's a benefit of having some things happen for me that I'm not really having to work real hard at forcing that thing. But it also can lead you away from yourself.
Yeah.
It just does. It takes you away from who Jenny is. Jenny's little automatic pilot doesn't take her to Jenny without work, without conscious effort. And that's where I see with people, like whether I'm coaching someone with ADHD or not, which I usually do, but I have coached people without it too. And that's the thing. That's where it's like, okay, you're just doing what people are telling you to do, or what you see is the way to do it. You're not thinking. Critical thinking is like out the window.
Yeah.
People are in society now. Like we've just gone way too far in trying to automate processes.
Yeah.
And our subconscious does automate processes. I wrote a book about how it automates it differently in ADHD. It's not that it's not doing it. It is.
Right.
It's just doing it different.
Yeah.
And yeah. Oh, I got all kinds of, this has been awesome.
That's cool. That's
yeah. Cool. No, I can't thank you enough for coming on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm going to leave in the show notes, but I'm going to tell people they can check out your website.
Yep.
You directly at andrewacri.com.
Yep. Andrew at andrewacri.com.
Can you spell it for us real quick?
Yes. So Andrew, A-N-D-R-E-W, at andrewacri.com. And that's A-N-D-R-E-W-A-K-R-E.com.
Yeah. I think people should reach out to you. You have so much to teach and great resources. I'm going to put down all the resources you've mentioned.
Yeah, and I really didn't do justice to the last resource there. I mean, those women are brilliant, Sarah Warden, Kristen Jacobson.
I saw Sarah Warden another thing earlier.
Okay, cool.
In the show, she is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a huge like fan. So thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again.
Awesome. Okay. Bye, Jenny.
Bye. That's it for the show, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. And whether you have ADHD yourself, or live with or love someone who does, or both, remember, we're all in this together. And everybody benefits when we begin to see through the other's eyes.